Hello?
Hey, listen, I know you were busy visiting your parents down in Mississippi, but before you left, I forgot to ask you to record an intro for this episode.
Oh, I'll totally do that, but can I eat our shrimp and crawfish first?
Oh, yeah, sure. Take your time.
A few moments later.
Hey, let me see if I can just take a stab at it and guess what you guys did.
Okay, give it a shot.
It's time for Rolling Dice and Taking Names, and in this episode, the guys look back at their Game of the Year from the first Squirrely Awards, plus reviews of Imperium Horizon, Xylitar, Printing Press, and Alpujarras, along with a taste buds of the new Coke Spiced.
That's pretty good. How did you do that?
I know things.
Hello and welcome to Rolling Dice and Taking Names. This is episode 317. Ding, 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 ding. This is Marty.
This is Tony. We're the red and white from state, and we know we are the best. With hands behind our backs, we can take on all the rest. Go to hell, Carolina, Devils in standing line. Red and white from NC State. Go State!
Woo! I'm sorry, we have to kick that off right off the bat, because for the first time in 37 years.
Oh my gosh!
Tony and I were sophomores at NC State the last time that we won an ACC basketball championship, and we just had to win 5 games in 5 days, beat 2 top 10 teams to do so, and we walked out of this Washington, D.C., where the tournament was held, as champions.
We are the champions.
Why didn't we do that one? We've probably done that one before.
Well, we've done Under Pressure too, but I mean, they're all appropriate for this. And I mean, so the night before the championship game, the gentleman, was it McConnell? Was that his name? Who banked in the three-pointer.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh.
So I was watching that game going, all right, you know, it was a good run. It was a good run. Virginia missed a front end of a 1-1 with 4 seconds left. It's 4 seconds. What's going to happen? Tonk. What?
And your son, Adam, is an avid, because he went there, avid State fan. I can only imagine what your phone was doing with him.
Oh, yeah. It was crazy. And he said, do you realize this is the first championship I've ever experienced in my lifetime with them? I went, Adam, enjoy this. It doesn't happen that often.
And Donna's running around the house, screaming, yelling. She's texting with a friend of my daughter who went to NC State too, and she was excited. And then today there was a revelation to me where I'm like, we're going to get some swag. We're going to be buying some stuff, because it's doubtful in my lifetime I'll be able to buy a championship shirt again.
Oh, 100%. They're already out there. Vanessa's already said, we should make a trip to Raleigh to go to the official student supply store and buy it from there. And I am all about that. So we may do a road trip up there and get some Howling Cow ice cream, which Coach Keats treats his basketball players with every time they have a win. And he posted this morning on Twitter, 5 scoops for 5 games. Congrats, gentlemen.
Well, BJ Burns could probably eat a gallon by himself.
DJ Burns, yes.
DJ, sorry.
I guess we need to fill people in, because what are y'all talking about?
It's just you and I talking. Who cares about the rest of the audience, okay?
Yeah, let's just fill in everybody. So we are in Atlantic Coast Conference territory, ACC territory, who's known for college basketball. Mm-hmm. Very, very big in this area. Tony and I went to one of the premier programs of the ACC, NC State. We have big rivals, Duke, North Carolina. And they call it Tobacco Road. Wake Forest is also a part of that. So we have these in-state rivals. And in this tournament, we had to beat both Duke and North Carolina, who are both ranked in the top 10, to be able to win this. So we beat our rivals to get. So it's just a huge thing. And for us growing up, the ACC basketball tournament was a major ordeal. I assume, Tony, just like with me in high school on Friday afternoon, the teachers rolled in a TV and we watched the ACC tournament in school on Friday afternoon.
Oh, absolutely. And we did it at work too. And I mean, it was one of the things where, you know, I worked for the power company in this area. Whenever it used to be in Greensboro, we would roll the trucks so that we would make sure nothing happened in that area because it would always be in this Greensboro. It was a terrific atmosphere. But yes, roll it in during work. We'd watch it during work. It was just, oh, so it's something big about it. And for you and I, we went through the Jimmy V era of 83, the Cardiac Pack. We watched that. I'm sure I didn't know you back then, but I'm sure back then you also knew you were going to NC State for engineering, probably.
Yep.
And then while we, like you said, we were at school, we got to relive it with Chris Corciani, I believe, and Rodney Monroe.
Fire and Ice. Nice. Yes. And that was their nicknames. Yep.
Yeah. Some of my favorite things Corciani would do, he'd be dribbling and he would get in front of one of their big guys and just stop. And the guy would run over him and get a foul on him.
Yep.
I loved watching that. So anyway, but yes, NC State basketball, big celebration last night. And oh, just the Cardiac Pack. I know they don't want to be called that, but hey, it's back.
No, I think they should. They're saying now is why not us?
It was
really cool. I was watching a lot of stuff on Twitter. So we had this big memorial bell tower in NC State. They light it up red whenever we win a game. And so some people from Twitter were showing the crowds that were basically around the bell tower all night long, just chanting Wolf Pack all night. It was just an incredible atmosphere. Now, I think when we won in 87, I think we were just coming off spring break. So I don't think I was on campus. I was coming back from camp. It always tends to happen on spring break because I don't remember being on campus the day that we won.
Right. I don't either. I don't remember 87 well, because that's been a few years, as we've pointed out. 37 years. Oh my gosh. That's unreal.
That was 6 minutes of sport talk. I'm sorry, y'all, because if it's another 37 years, that means on episode 1000 and something, when Tony are in our 90s, it won't happen again.
I was calculating that out. Yeah, we would definitely be 94. I don't know if we would be, I know I probably won't be able to see the TV, so somebody will have to tell me what's going on. But and then why not us? Why not come to us for your board gaming news?
Oh, so I got to tell this story. I did wear my NC State shirt today. I had to. Vanessa's like, you know what, St. Patrick's Day? I said, it's only every 37 years. She said, no, I totally understand. Wear red. So I wore red today. We go to Bojangles to get one of their chicken rice bowls, which... there's a whole nother story behind the issue of chicken rice bowls. But anyway, so I walk in and there's a teenager comes around from the back and he says, all right, you can serve everybody, but that guy right there. And it wasn't clicking on me at first. I said, me? He said, yeah, with the shirt that you're wearing. I went, oh, but we're ACC champs. I went, oh, I know. You beat my Carolina. You beat Duke. And I said, but five games in 5 days, back to back to back to back. And he went, no, much respect. You guys deserve it. It was really cool. And that's just the atmosphere we have around this area on ACC tournament weekend.
Oh, yeah. You see people in the grocery store like I did yesterday. And we do this little pack symbol where you do the little wolf pack with the ears.
Yeah.
Yeah, y'all can't see that. And people know exactly. And you talk briefly. And you just hope someone doesn't keep talking to you because I'm in the grocery store, man. I got to go. Let's go.
If I'm wearing a state something or somebody else is and I see them across the way, I just give them the little pack symbol. Or if I walk by them, I go, go pack. And they go, go pack.
Go pack.
You know, it's a nice little tight-knit community.
Well, I've gotten back from a vacation. I was on a cruise and we did a East Caribbean cruise. But I put in our show notes and Mario has no idea what I did. It just simply says, I did a thing. Cruise news. I did a couple things on the cruise, and he does know that I did some zip lining in Puerto Rico. We talked about that at game night. And while we were on the cruise, Don and I, we got to play a couple. We played Bonanza Duel.
Ding, 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 ding. For those who are old enough to remember the theme song to Bonanza.
Yeah. And I don't, yeah, we say Bonanza, but I think it's Bonnet. Anyway.
Is it Bonnet? B-O-H-N-A?
H, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so we're doing that. And this cruise line, it was a, it's not the Royal Caribbean. It was the one they owned below that. Celebrity. They didn't really have a good area to go play cards and things like that. And so we were trying to play and the table wasn't big enough. But anyway, so I went zip lining in Puerto Rico. That was amazing. It was dark, thank goodness, or I don't know if I would have actually pushed off and zip lined down. It was interesting. The guy, Marty, when I got done with one of them, he goes, man, you were going pretty fast. I'm like, is that a good thing? He goes, maybe. I went, okay, thank you very much. So that was fun. But on our way back, I passed by these, I don't know if you've heard of these. They're huge. They're big. They're incredible. I said, you know what, Donna? We might as well do it. She goes, do we have to? I said, yeah, we do. So we stopped at Bucky's. in Daytona Beach.
Oh, let me just sit back and enjoy this. I'm either going to be very happy or very upset with what you're getting ready to say. So go ahead.
All right. The sandwich was incredible. Amazing operation they have. It was. Donna loved it. I loved the sandwiches. We were trying to figure out what was.
Beef brisket, right?
Beef brisket sandwiches. Yes, they were good. And those people were sitting there. They were slinging that brisket, baby. It was coming out. And she's like, oh, it's going to take us forever to get these things. Nope. You walk in, and it was just like a cafeteria line in that one. This is in the Daytona Beach version. And just right up the road, they have another one, I think, in Fort Lauderdale. So, yeah, walk in, grab those. But it was wall-to-wall people. It was ridiculous. I didn't know if we were ever going to get out of there.
It is. Did you go in the bathrooms?
Yeah. I had to. I had to pee.
But, I mean, they are nice bathrooms, aren't they?
They were behind. They weren't. Donna almost, she almost needed to, can you just spare two squares? So she almost didn't have any toilet paper. So that was upsetting, but she survived. And then mine was, it was kind of messy. I don't think they had
really?
Just before the volume. Spring break time, man. I'm telling you.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And it's Florida. Right. And it was just freaking ridiculous. I mean, I got a parking spot, but there were people waiting to park.
Oh, okay. I've been into them when they're crowded. I don't think I've ever seen it that crowded.
An incredible experience. And I'll admit, what is it? The Bucky's Nuggets, the popcorn?
Beaver Nuggets.
Beaver Nuggets. Yeah. Which flavor did you think I got?
So what is it? It's regular and is it caramel?
There were four versions. So I got the cinnamon caramel.
Did you like them? I haven't tried that one.
Oh, so good. Oh, man. That was special right there. Drinks, everything. It was an incredible experience. But she looked at me. She goes, we've done it. We're done.
Okay. But here's the thing is, you went to probably when it was the most insane. Like the one in Florence, it is not nearly that insane. So if you ever go to Myrtle Beach or anything, stop at that one. It won't be as crazy.
I was even going to get a shirt. And I couldn't. I couldn't find them.
What?
I didn't know where they were in the store.
I don't know how you missed it because it's like displays after displays of Bucky shirts and apparel.
But they weren't basic. I just wanted a basic Bucky shirt so I could say, because what I was going to do is I was going to show you on here and you would be, but no. But yeah, so we did the Bucky's thing. I thought you'd be proud of me for actually taking the time and stopping at Bucky's.
At least you felt the sandwich was worth it, which is.
Oh, yes.
Did you get any beef jerky? Do you like beef jerky?
Yeah, I love beef jerky, but I wasn't going to deal with that line. I was just like, y'all go ahead. I can get beef jerky some other time. We've had it before, so.
Did you have the line checking out?
There was no line checking out. That's what was so insane.
Well, you know they have beef jerky on the wall. You just go grab a pack.
Oh, no.
You don't have to go stand in line.
I didn't see it. It was just like a wall-to-wall people. Yeah.
If it's like most Bucky's, you have the place where you can go get the jerky cut for you, but right beside of it is just a wall of prepackaged jerky. Just grab a pack and walk away. Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah. So, done, one and done. We may stop again. We'll have to see if we ever head down to the Florida coast again, and we'll stop in once again. Maybe do a better timing of it, not because the way it was timed, it was perfect for lunch and everything. So, but yeah, still.
Was it St. Augustine's?
No, it was Daytona Beaches.
I didn't realize Daytona Beach had
I think
one.
That's where it was. There were two of them. They're like within 50 miles of each other as you're going. One's on the going right up 95 and going down 95. So it's on either side. So just wait and see what you can get at Bucky's. Okay.
There's one just south of Jacksonville. That's the
one. Yeah, it's the next one. So that would be the Daytona Beach one. Yep.
Oh, yep, Bucky's. That's awesome. That's awesome.
Next thing. We are doing this Star Wars Unlimited, what would you call this thing? Media challenge? What would you call this?
I don't know. It's several content creators who are just getting together once a week to play a game of Star Wars Unlimited. But what we're doing is we're starting with the basic starter deck, Luke Skywalker or Darth Vader. And each week we're opening three packs of boosters and we'll modify our starter deck each week with those cards and then play another game. And the idea is that we play, the first week is with an unaltered pack, then we play for 8 more weeks, and essentially we'll open an entire booster box. So by the end, you'll have a totally different looking deck than what you had at the beginning. So it's just a cool way to open packs, interact with other creators, and that's what we're doing, yeah.
Yeah, and I like the fact that you can use any leader now that we finished the first week, so you can swap out your leader. And so one of my first three booster packs, I got Chewbacca, so I've swapped out to Chew and gotten rid of Luke. All right.
Did you get anything cool? Cool foils or anything? Hyperspace?
No. Not that I recognize. I'll have to go back through them and see what I got. But I just was looking at them. I was trying to put the deck together so I could get ready for my next match. And I'm going to try something that was something we used to do in Lord of the Rings TCG. I'm going to try to do a swarm deck or what was it? The Goblin Rush deck.
I know we call them Zerg decks because of StarCraft, but yeah, I know what you mean. Like low cost weenies, you know, just get out there and you can get them out there fast and just swarm people with them. Yep.
Exactly. And I pulled out C-3PO and R2-D2 combo that is basically, you know, look at a card, put a card in your hand with you with that certain combo that you're going to do. So I pulled, you know, that out. I've gotten rid of at least 10 cards from the original starter to try to build that swarm. To build that swarm deck, because I will say one thing I've noticed, that a lot of the cards are base units. I didn't get a lot of star or space units.
Space as opposed to ground.
Yeah, opposed to ground. Mm-hmm.
Wow, you were with three packs able to get enough of the same color aspect to put into one deck. So you still only got three colors in your deck?
Yep, only got three colors.
What's Chewie's ability? I don't know what his thing is. Do you know what his shtick is?
Just keep talking while I go over here and get this thing out.
Excuse me while I whip this thing out. Everybody's going to start quoting Blazing Saddles now, baby.
All right, so we pulled it out over here. Let me whip this thing out over here.
We're such children.
There we are. Oh, I don't want to hear it. It was something I was watching the other day, and they were really children. Chewbacca's special ability, play a unit that costs three or less from your hand, it gains Sentinel for the phase.
Oh, so that will go well with a bunch of cheap units. Oh, dude, that's cool. That's a great idea. You are always good at clever at deck building. You always come up with some clever ideas.
I don't
win. I'm saying you see something and you go, oh, okay, I know I'm going to do with this and build a deck around it. You've always been good at that.
Chewie's ability is for every damage he has on him, he gets +1/+1. He gains grit.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
He gets +1/+0 for each damage on it. So that gives him the ability. So as you're trying to hit him, he will get stronger and stronger. So you won't damage him. Go right ahead. He's going to come back in. And he's 9 health.
Dang. So even if there's some way, there's some cards where you can increase their health and toughen them up even more. I remember in Lord of the Rings, there was a card like that, that as they took damage, they dealt more. I can't remember what the keyword was.
I can't either, and I was sitting here looking for it because I did put it in the, it's entrenched by adding entrenched. Attached unit can't attack bases, but it's +3/+3. That's okay. If you add that to him, he's basically cleaning out the other person's side.
Yep, that's true.
And then the other thing that I enjoyed putting in here, and I know I'm sitting here talking about decks and nobody cares, but guess what? If you started listening to this podcast and we did Netrunner, you would understand what this means. And the only other thing that there was a card that I got you may have seen, and it was. And you'll know him because it's a Mondo, maybe not, Baze Malbus.
Okay.
He's got grit.
I don't know that character, but anyway, go ahead, yeah.
Yeah, I remember him from the Han Solo stuff.
Wait a minute. I think, was he in Rogue One?
Rogue One, that's it.
Okay.
He's Sentinel, and he gets grit too. So for every damage on him, he gets +1.
Sentinel is really, really good to protect your base. So if you got a bunch of Sentinel guys out there, that means nobody's going to be hitting your base, and instead you'll be hitting theirs instead. That's good. Mm-hmm.
So my question is, if you have a leader, can you have the card of that leader in your deck as well?
Yes, you can. Even though they have the same name, if it's a different title, it's fine. So when I have a name and a little title underneath it, those are considered two separate cards.
So it's like having multiple Spider-Man from Marvel.
Yes. Yeah.
Heroclix, which always drove me crazy, is having 5 Spider-Man out on the board or whatever. I was like, holy cow. All right. That was Star Wars. And okay, this is a good show. Happy to be back from the Squirrelies.
Yes. And during the whole time with the Squirrelies, I noticed on our Discord channel that a new Coca-Cola Zero Sugar flavor has come out, and it was called, got it sitting right here, it's called Spiced. And so it's been talked about on our Discord channel, and the general consensus is, I like it, but I can't drink all of it, or I just don't care for it at all. So nobody's been really blown away by this, so I thought, okay, we need to try this for ourselves. Tony and I both have a nice, chilled Coca-Cola Spiced, so we think it's a good time to do a segment of Taste Buds. Taste Buds.
taste buds. Two incredible stuff. Taste buds. Two incredible stuff. Taste buds. They're just a bunch of, they're just a bunch of.
Has Donna tried this yet, by chance? Nobody can hear you shake your head no.
Oh, I didn't know we were coming back to the show. My bad.
The music's over. We're back.
Okay.
So, everybody in my family
Donna has
tried
not
it,
tried it.
But as always, they never tell me what they think of it because they don't want to judge my opinion. So,
okay. They don't want to bias your opinion. They don't want to, yes. They don't want, so, you know, if as long as this doesn't taste like those three flavors that came out with Dreams and whatever the other ones that had all that vanilla taste to it, I'll be okay with this. So I'm interested in this. Are we ready to, so you've already opened yours so that everybody can sample. Oh, okay. So are we ready to crack these bad boys open? Woo, nice smell.
Now here's the thing is, I'm not a big spiced person. I don't like all spiced at all.
Mm-hmm. I don't either.
I don't like that stuff. And
no, the raspberry.
No, yeah, it's definitely a berry flavor, isn't it?
It's not as strong as Mountain Dew Spark, which you can no longer get, which is crushing my wife. I'm liking this flavor right now. I'm on the smell of it.
It's definitely raspberry. All right, you want to give it a shot?
Let's do this.
All right, here we go. Oh, you took a big old swig.
I'm thirsty.
All right.
Nothing to it. You got to take another hit. Take another hit.
When it's on my palate, I like the taste of it. But there's an aftertaste. Now that it's gone, I'm getting the spiced sort of thing. I'm getting the same sort of thing when I eat like a spiced food with that allspice that I'm not crazy about at all.
Okay.
Oh, you know how you have, you know how some apple cider has that spice stuff in it?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'm not a big fan of like when they put all that stuff in there.
I don't like apple cider.
Mm. And that's what this tastes like after I've had apple cider, had that same leftover taste. So I do remember, I think Vanessa said that she likes it, but after about four or five sips, she didn't want to drink anymore.
Interesting. Okay. I'll keep trying. I bought this thing and I'm not going to say how much it cost. Holy cow. Might as well have gone and bought a 12 pack, but I knew I didn't need all of that.
Is it not insane now how much bottled drinks? If you don't find one that's on special, it's like $2.50 for a bottle.
I'm like, that's 20 ounces. Give me a break. Let me go get the 12. Let me go get the, it's $10 for a 12 pack now here in the Carolinas. I'm like, good grief. That's unreal. But now we're being old men. I don't dislike it. I can definitely taste the berry in it. It's one of those things that I'm like, okay, it's not going to substitute out for like my Pepsi Mango Zero. Love that. That stuff is so good.
You can still get that? I didn't realize that.
Yeah. It's at Harris Teeter right now on sale for $3.33.
It's the aftertaste of the spice I don't like at all.
Ugh. Okay.
So I have to drink it to get that taste out of my mouth, but after I do, it's gone. Now, I hope that Major Melon Zero Sugar comes back for Mountain Dew.
It's in. It's back in the stores.
That's my summer drink right there. I think that is just a refreshing flavor, so I need to go get some of those.
Yeah. I when I was in the grocery store the other day, they had that special going on, so I was like, well, they didn't have any Pepsi Zero, but I did pick up the Mango and the Mountain Dew Zero, and of course, what was the other one I did? There was another flavor I picked up, so. Okay, so yeah, so spiced, yeah, that's all right. I mean, you know, for me, I think it is, you know, the Coke flavors. I don't need all, I enjoyed the Diet Coke with lime more than anything, but their flavors don't do anything for me. Just give me the Coke Zero.
Did they ever make a zero sugar with lime?
No.
Mm. Okay.
That pulled it away well before the Coke Zero came out. But you can definitely get it in those flavor mix-ins at Qdoba, where we have game night.
They got flavor mix-ins at Qdoba?
No, they don't. I was thinking of Moe's. Yeah.
I wish they did. That would be kind of cool. All right, so that's it. We mentioned Bonanza, but we really haven't talked about any gaming yet, so I guess we should go talk about some board games. If you haven't heard, Miniature Market is now under new ownership. Two former Asmodee employees have purchased Miniature Market. And we had a meeting with them, and we just wanted to let you know, guess what? Nothing is going to change for you. You're still going to get incredible prices and super cheap shipping and fast turnaround. And I do mean fast turnaround. They have totally called up on everything. I placed an order on a Monday and ordered just the regular cheapest $6.99 shipping. I said, it doesn't matter when it gets to me. It still showed up on a Friday. So the turnaround is really quick. So if you're used to using Miniature Market, just wanted to let you know, with the new ownership, nothing will change for you on the front end. Everything is going to look the same and operate the same as it always was. They do want us to let you know about some brand new deals that they're going to have coming out now called the Backroom Deals. These are special deals that are going to run every Tuesday from 10 a.m. Central Time to Friday at 3 p.m. Central Time. These are weekly as a pages and tons of deals that they got allotted. Tony joked, is this the stuff that doesn't sell? And it's like, no, Tony, it's not the stuff that doesn't sell. Sometimes we overbuy some things and they just have some extra stock that they want to move. And it's like, how can we move this stock? I got an idea. Let's cut the prices on that thing so we can get it and free up some more warehouse space from other games that are coming in. To find out about those, you need to make sure to sign up to their mailing list where you're going to get these deals and can see what they're going on. Again, these are called the Backroom Deals, running from Tuesday to Friday. Make sure to click and store our affiliate link, which is in our Discord page and also on our website, RollDiceTakeNames.com. It really helps out the show. So keep your eye on those Backroom Deals and get a deal yourself over at MiniatureMarket.com.
Five-minute initiative begins in 3, 2, 1.
Last year, Portal Games put out a game called Gutenberg. This year, they come out with a little cousin, themed in the same sort of style, but not necessarily just a lighter version of Gutenberg, and it's called Printing Press. This is designed by designers. I'm just going to say the last name as best as I can. Wojtowiak and Wozniak.
You nailed Wozniak.
I think so.
And if Ignacy wants, he may want to just go ahead and record these and send these over to us. Just giving him an option.
That would help out greatly. This is a 1-4 player game. It's going to play in 15 to 60 minutes. It's kind of like a card drafting game where you're trying to get these strips of three character or letters strips that you're placing on your tableau in a certain order to try to produce a 3x3 grid that meets the demands of some tiles and printing plates that you draft at the beginning of the round. And the more features that you match on those plates and tokens will give you higher points at the end of the round. And you're going to play three rounds trying to create these printing plates, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Right. You got your customers come to you. He's got some plates. You got some frames that you got. The frames are what are going to frame up the order that you're trying to match to meet certain goals. I mean, like having certain colors in certain rows or columns or having certain symbols. And if you complete the various orders, you're going to get additional points at the end of the round from that. Now, sometimes when you slip over the printing cards, which you're drafting from, after you draft the plates and frames, you'll draft the printing cards. You may not like those printing cards. They're not going to help you reach your goal. You can discard them, and you can draw from a bag. And I wanted to bring up at this point, this is a very nice-smelling bag. It's not like the Stone Age's stinky leather cup. Yes. So, you know, you can smell this bag all you want. Thank you so much, Ignacy, for giving us a very nice smelling bag. I really do appreciate that.
Maybe it was a former potpourri bag.
It could have been. Maybe it contained wax melts. Who knows?
I don't know. Yeah, but this game, like I said, it's played over three rounds. Immediately you start out and you take the frame, which is basically a cardboard frame that can hold a 3x3 grid underneath it. And these plates that will have, hey, if you score this, if you get this, you're going to get some points at the end. And then you're going to be drafting cards in the middle of the table, and you're going to draft six of those. And when those are pulled off of the deck, they must be oriented vertically or horizontally. And when you draft them, they must go on your table in the same order, and they will go on top of what you've already placed. Now, the strips that you're placing could form larger than a 3x3 space, but once you've drafted six times, you're going to take your 3x3 grid and place it strategically over what you've put on your table, exposing only a 3x3 grid, and then score that.
You got to get that frame in there. You got to be thinking that. Some of these are fairly easy to make. I know when I played this with Don and Marty, it was like the printing cards that were being drawn were not meeting my goals. It was very frustrating. So I was going to that bag oftentimes. Now, one thing I did like about when we were playing this game is the fact that you can overlay and you're not bounded to keep it inside that 3x3 grid. That's something people have to think beyond the box. Like, maybe I need to shift out a little bit. Now, during a round, this is another key aspect of it, that during the round, there is a dark circle round indicator where you will take a token and place it on the frame that you have and indicate in-game scoring for that game after three rounds, like the number of blue inks that I have showing in my frames. I'm going to get points for that. Okay. This game also has some special people that are there. Gutenberg's there, and they'll give you some special advantages that you want. Like mine was Gutenberg had, you know, times three for in-game scoring for a certain one. It's a tile laying game. That's what it is. It's a tile laying game.
Yeah.
That you got to meet certain objectives.
Tile laying drafting style game. And also at the beginning, everybody gets a unique character ability that will have a certain effect that you can take during the game, once per game sort of thing, but also has the initiative set up to determine who goes first for drafting. But that can change over time too, because you can draft these cards and may have black cubes on them, or have a way to get black cubes. And the number of black cubes that you have will help you with what your initiative value is. You're going to look at how many that you got. Whoever has the most will get draft first that next round. So if you feel like, man, I really need to have the first choice in the next round, this round I'm going to draft one of these strips that has a black cube showing on it, and that'll help me out in having initiative in a future round.
Yeah, Donna didn't like that. We scrapped that rule. It's my game. I can make whatever rule up I want to make.
Really? How about if somebody needed to go first?
We just alternated. She said, screw this. I don't like it.
Okay.
Happy wife, happy life. Just saying.
I understand.
You understand that.
That would make some gamers unhappy. It's like, I really need to go first this round. I was like, sorry.
Tough noogies. We'll play it that way next time. Okay. But this time, it was just easier to keep.
That's a variant.
Yeah, that's a variant.
House rule.
House rule. It's my game. I can, as Rob Davio says, it's my game. I can make it however I want to play it.
That's fair.
Yes. Yeah. So now I will say this. On the frames, you have the ability, if you get both objectives, you score all the points. On the plates, you have to score the first one to get the second one.
Right.
Fast game. Very fast game. We played this, even with the teach, I think we played it in under 30 minutes.
Yeah.
She really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed playing with her. For you and I, we had a very tight game. You felt like you were not very close in that. But, hey, at the end, you were within 2 points of the score.
Yep.
So, I mean, this, I think, because of how quick it is to set up, it's one of these games that it's a filler.
Yeah, no, it is. And so I don't want people to get confused. This is not a lighter version of Gutenberg.
No.
It is totally different. It's just in that same space and same theme of trying to fill orders and make plates and everything with the Gutenberg's print and press. So don't get confused. It's not a lighter version of something else.
It's a puzzly tile laying game that, you know, if certain plates do not come out, then you're not going to score very well. So you just have to mitigate that with the drawback. I mean, yeah, easy to teach. It's not hard. Just keep that in mind.
Yep.
So that is Printing Press from Portal Games.
5 minute initiative is complete.
Over in our Discord channel, and if you're not a member, we'd really like you to come over there and join on up. Be sure to head over to our website and to find the link that gets you an invite into the Discord channel, and you can see some incredible discussions. Like
what's that
the fact
website?
That, you know, I don't know the website. It's Roll Dice Take Names. RollDiceTakeNames.com. I mean, incredible discussions. Like just recently, it was the fact that it is now mowing season and people have already cranked up their mowers. Then we go into some of the grumpy news and people are talking about taxes, just like this show. Board game discussion limited, everything else on the table.
Hey, it's my fault. I started the whole tax discussion. I was very grumpy. I will not get into it now, But that was that was my, that's where I got to vent for a little bit. But yeah.
Yeah, pay some inheritance tax too. That's always a beautiful thing. So with that in mind, someone suggested, hey, the Squirrelies came out. They really appreciated some of our picks, some of our winners. But they were curious if, you know what? Have y'all ever gone back and listened to your old shows? Why would we do that? And find out what was your game of the year? And talk about, is it still, does it still stand the test of time? So 9 years ago, Marty and I had the first Squirrelies, and we went back and we listened to that and found out what was our game of the years. Now, for Marty, I'll let him introduce his, but I'll go ahead and just tell you what mine was. Mine was Pandemic Legacy.
I'll let him introduce his, but I'm going to tell you what mine was.
I'm just going to go, because I saw you slide away from the microphone.
That's fair, because I was looking at the name of something about something I was going to talk about on my game. Go ahead.
Okay. So mine was Pandemic Legacy. What was your pick in 2016 for games of 2015?
That would be Ashes, Rise of the Phoenixborn from Plat Hat Games.
Mm-hmm. So do you still have it?
Yes, I still do. So, I mean, that's gone through a lot, right? They released a second version of that. So I got the second starter set, which they changed a lot of cards and fixed a lot of the issues that they had from the previous one once the card pool got so large. I have a friend with at work that I played. We played a few times. We didn't play anymore after that. But then this year, they came out with a cooperative version called Ashes Red Rains. And they took a competitive head-to-head game and created a really, really cool cooperative game using the same basic gameplay as Ashes. You build your own decks and everything, but you're playing against the game itself. And I really, really like that version of play. So you still get that feel of Ashes. So yes, I still play, not competitively, probably more cooperatively, but that's a game that I've loved so much that I'll never get rid of it. Obviously, I don't need the first edition anymore because it was totally replaced with the second edition. But yes, I would pull that out anytime. It's one of those things that if you said, hey, Marty, I got a pre-built Ashes deck you want to play sometime, I would in a second. And for me, it definitely holds the test of time.
I bought into the Ashes when it first came out, and then I got rid of it because it was enjoyable, but you know, we didn't get a chance to get together as much to play, and you know, I didn't have the people at work to play. So I did enjoy the game, but since it was sitting on the shelf, I you know, like 3-4 years later, I said, you know what, it's time. I think it was one of the games that I shed when I moved and sent it to somebody. Said, here, you can have this game. I don't want it anymore. Now for me, Pandemic Legacy, obviously, it is no longer on my shelf. Legacy. Okay, there we go. That's the discussion on my game. But I still do have some of the other Pandemics that came out. I think it was like Season 0, Pandemic Legacy number 2. I have not done those yet. But I want to do them. I just haven't found the right group.
I understand Pandemic Legacy isn't on your shelf anymore because it's a play one and done. So it makes sense not being. But all these years later, I mean, do you still feel like it was worth your game of the year? Or if you were to go back and look and say, oh yeah, in hindsight, I shouldn't have made it my game of the year. Like in hindsight, I'm very comfortable making Ashes my game of the year. It had a long-lasting effect on me that I'm still talked about now because I just played it again this year.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. If you could find an unopened copy, I would play it again because I have forgotten. I know what some of the special things that appeared, but a lot of it I've forgotten. So yeah, I would play that again. Especially with the fact that we messed up some of the rules when we played it originally, and I would like to see if it is, you know, how hard is it? And I think it'd be an excellent game to still get people involved in a legacy style game because it wasn't overtaxing. It wasn't one, you know, how things build over time. Oh, here's the next legacy game. Here's the next legacy game. We got to add all these components in. You know, Leacock and Davio, boom, threw out this amazing game that everybody should at least get to enjoy. So I would play it again, and it was, I think, at that time, definitely worthy of my game of the year.
I played it, finished it, and really enjoyed it, had a great experience. We started number 2, but we just stopped. We just never went back to it. I don't think it grabbed as much as number 1, because the unfolding story of number 1 was really interesting to us. Mm-hmm. And number 2, was number 2 or 3 the sequel? I can't remember.
Number
One was how everything got started, but now that we knew the story of one, there wasn't as many surprises that we were seeing in 2.
Yeah, I think 2 was rebuilding the world.
So then that was after, so it was a sequel, not a prequel. Okay.
Yeah. And then 0 was the spy one, if I remember correctly.
0 was the prequel. That's it. Like, yeah, Pandemic Legacy. So let me ask you this. If today you wanted to start a legacy game, would you be inclined more towards something basic like Ticket to Ride Legacy or Pandemic Legacy?
Any of them, because even Sagrada Artesian's Legacy, very challenging game. But from a Pandemic, it'd be kind of interesting. I would do any of them because of the mechanics are pretty straightforward. I think I would probably, lean more towards the Pandemic because it's cooperative, where Sagrada and Ticket to Ride are individuals,
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, here's a cooperative game. Now, after having lived through, the pandemic from the standpoint of my wife saying, I don't ever want to play Pandemic again, I'll give her another year. She'll probably want to play it again. That's one of her favorite games of all time. Mm-hmm.
So looking back at the games of 2015, both of us agree that, 9 years later, we still feel it's worthy as our game of the year. And if you've never played though, well, Ashes is a little bit tougher. If you've never played Ashes, you need somebody. It's a card game. It's a competitive card game, so you need somebody to go play with. But the mechanisms and the rules and the use of dice that Isaac Vega created, I just still love to this day. It's an amazing resource mechanic that nobody has duplicated. Anton, I guess you would feel that if nobody's ever played Pandemic Legacy, you'd still recommend it to them today.
Yeah, Pandemic, but Legacy, it's that next step and something that will definitely tell the story. I'm sitting here thinking, well, let's look at the 2015 games that were there that, may have been a part of. I think Blood Rage was in 2015. I think that was one of the games that was on your list. I can't remember. I'd have to go back and listen to it a little bit more closely. I just quickly moved forward through it and found out which game was your game of the year. Mysterium, Forbidden Stars. Wow.
Wow. No. I love Forbidden Stars. I would play Forbidden Stars anytime. That's still a game I anxious to get back to the table again. But I still would give Ashes the edge over it because of just how much time I invested in it. Blood Rage is amazing too. I spend a lot of time playing Blood Rage. That's a great game also, though.
Champions of Midgard. I'm like, wow.
Dang. That was a good year. Jeez.
Potion Explosions was we still play that on the iPad, Potion Explosions. Yeah, I mean, a ton of games that came out. The Bloody Inn, Karuba was a great family game. Baseball Highlights 2045, which now has a Kickstarter going on. Can you believe that?
Is it like a deluxe version? It's like everything in one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm, everything in one. Just a lot of games that came out at that time that we're just like, interesting, but I'm sure they were all part of the Squirrelies back then. But for us, Ashes and Pandemic Legacy, if you didn't get a chance to play them back in 2015, go see if you can find a copy. You might be able to find it at the Salvation Army or the Goodwill store.
I wouldn't want to get a copy of Legacy at the Salvation Army because it's been used and played. So don't do that.
Don't do that.
So we've been talking about the benefits of Game Toppers recently. Not only the Game Topper system itself, but the mats, storage for game mat solutions. All this is still available as a late pledge option over at GameToppersLLC.com. And Tony, when I go and look at their late pledge page, it's showing an estimated shipping of 424. Now, as the time of this and release of this recording, I believe it is 324, March 24. So that means next month shipping will occur.
That's awesome that he's able to get that out, meet his goals. I hope everything goes well for him over there at Game Toppers. Matter of fact, at Marty, I was sitting in Sam's the other day. I was picking up I should get one of these nice little white tables and then go set my Game Topper upstairs. And I'm going to do that just so I can have my eventually play Gloomhaven. That box has been sitting now probably for 5 years unopened. I need to just go set that up somewhere, and that's what I need to do.
That'd be you have your own little gaming room. You and Donna go up there and play.
No, that's not going to happen. It's just going to be my solo gaming room.
That's just going to be my room. No, that's a great idea because you can buy one of those tables for, what, 40, 50 bucks? I don't know what they are now, something in that range.
Functional, but the game toppers will keep everything intact, especially when the dogs come and visit for where my daughter. And just the other day, when we were playing on Printing Press, I rolled out one of his mats right there on the table. So nice to have those around. And I love the fact that the mat goes to Qdoba with us for that table. Matter of fact, I spilled some salsa on it, wiped right up. Thank you, Scotchgard. Thank you, Berkey. Kept it nice and clean. But even with that pattern, no one would have noticed.
No, that's true. That's true. Yeah, he has some amazing patterns, all stitched edges, very thick mats. Amazing system for being able to play your games and everything with a lot of different sizes. So if this interests you, head over GameToppersLLC.com, go to Late Pledge, shipping in April, order now.
Five-minute initiative begins in 3, 2, 1.
After Bezier Games released Cat in the Box last year, and it was a super big hit, they've really been on this tear of like, okay, we're just going to release a bunch of trick-taking games because people tend to like trick-taking games, which we do. And recently we got a game that's going to be coming out from them, from designer Christopher Way, called Xylitar. Now, I was immediately interested in this based on the theme. It's a polar bear who's from the 80s, who's designed an electronic xylophone. It looks like a guitar, and he wants to... What are you shaking your head for?
That's too much fluff. The Just theme? Get to the game.
That's true. That's true. So this is a trick-taking game, Tony, but in the likes of something like Silver, where in those games where you have cards face down on the table... And there's some...
Or golf. People may be more familiar with golf, the game Golf, or Rat-A-Tat-Cat, or those types of games. Yep.
Yeah, so hidden knowledge sort of thing, where you have different colors of cards, and each color has a range, like from 0 to 3 or 0 to 11, and you're basically trying to take as many tricks as you can. Each trick is worth a point. There is also a bidding mechanic in the game we'll talk about for a second, but... Other than that, it's going to play like a straight trick-taking game. It's just the fact that the cards are sitting out on the table face down in front of you, and you're not exactly sure what you got, but you know what your neighbor has.
That's right, and that's the hook. Here's the hook. I'm arranging these cards from high to low, and I'm going to pass them to my neighbor. So I know which cards he's got. He has no clue. So it's one of these things where you're looking at, you at least know the color of the suit, but not the rank of the suit. You know, that to me was the hook of this game, is trying to figure out based on, as I am revealing cards, here is, oh, okay, what does that mean as far as the ranks below this card or above these cards? I can fill it out. But then the person who passed me the cards knows what to do, and he can play off that, knowing how he will win tricks, knowing based on what that other person may have. He has some knowledge based on what you may be getting ready to play because of what's on the table. I really enjoyed that. I thought that was a very interesting mechanic.
I will say that if you are not into memorization games, this may be a little tough. There's a lot that you need to keep track of. One, you do understand what you passed your partner. Awesome. But not only that, as you pull cards from your table, you need to remember, oh, that's right, this was a 3. Everything down below this, I know, is below a 3, but you need to keep track of what everybody else has played too, because if you can keep track of their gaps and what card was pulled from that gap, then you kind of know the range of numbers from them, and you understand, it's like, well, I know if I play this card, I'm pretty safe. I might win this trick because the chances are I'm going to have the highest of this card. You always know what the trick color is based on the number of players. It's going to be different based on the number of players. Like in our case, we play in 3 players. We knew yellow was trump. I said trick earlier. It was trump. Yellow was trump. So you could look around the table. Oh, okay. So nobody else has any yellow in front of them. So I know I'm going to be able to win this when I lead with this one.
Right. And each of the backs that you can see is, you know, that like purple may be 0 to 3. That's the highest in rank.
0 to 4.
Okay. I was guessing there.
But I'm looking at it right here. Yeah. Like I said, pink is 0 to 3. Like green is 0 to 7. So the what's nice is the back of the card show you the range. So you don't have to memorize that.
Right. And so you can look across and say, okay, I see Marty's got a bunch of these. Oh, he just showed a purple 4. okay, there's a pink right there. Well, we know it's not going to be a 4. It's going to be a 3. So everything down below that is going to be 3 or less. So this helps you make decisions on how to play certain cards when it comes your time. Now, let's talk about bidding. During one of your turns, after you have played a card, you can now bid on how many tricks you think you're going to take by flipping over 2 of the cards that you don't know, looking
adjacent
at them.
Adjacent to each other.
They're adjacent to each other. Sorry. Make sure. Yeah. Flip over 2 that are adjacent and say, they're going to show you 2 numbers. You pick the number that you think is going to represent the number of tricks that you're going to make. You get additional points. There's no penalty. I like that. 5 points for the win if you get them right. And then after the round is done, total up the number of tricks you have. Did you meet your bid? If so, then add 5 to it. Play for whatever the rounds are. 3. Is it 3 for just 3 people? Is there more for more players? So if there's not, Marty's giving me hand signals. I love this. And there you go. So the game is very fast. Probably the slowest part of this game is just having to deal out cards. Other than that, this thing flies. I did. I really enjoyed playing this game.
Yeah, I do too. The only thing that I'm not really good at memory person. So that I think there were times like, oh crap, I can't remember what that gap was. But it doesn't matter because the game flies. It's fast. Shuffle up, deal again. We play 3 rounds really quickly. I will say we struggled with some of the colors because we were under these nasty, ugly, yellowish lights. So between like blue, purple, and pink, it was really hard to tell. It's like, wait a minute, is that the dark purple or is that the pink sort of deal? I guess if we looked at the range on the cards, it kind of does show you that to indicate what that is. So we did struggle with that. For some reason, as a musician, I don't understand why they put the notes on the back of what they did for ranges. I don't understand why an 8th flatted note is a range of 0 to 4, but a dotted 8th note is range 0 to 6. I was mathematically, Tony, trying to figure out why they picked these notes for ranges. I wish they would have actually had intervals between 2 notes on a staff showing the actual number of notes between 2 notes is actually the range. But that's the musician in me. I struggled with it. For 10 minutes, I looked at the back of these cards trying to figure out why did they pick these particular style notes for these ranges, and I just couldn't come up with anything.
And for people like me who have no clue about that, don't care.
I know. It's just me. So, yes, if you like trick-taking games, Bezier Games has another one out there, Xylitar. It's quick. It has a little bit of memory element to it, but if you like that kind of, like you said, golf style thing or silver style thing where there's face down cards that you're playing, check this out. It's going to be coming out later this year.
5 minute initiative is complete.
Back in 2021, Osprey Games released an extremely popular deck building game called Imperium. They came out with 2 versions of the game. And 3 years later, here we are in 2024, they released a new version called Imperium Horizons, designed by Nigel Buckle and David Tertsey. It has a lot of the original mechanics of the original games of basically a civ builder through deck building mechanisms, except they just add a ton of new factions. But what's cool is if you have previous versions, you get this version, factions can intermingle and you play with each other. So it's been 3 years since we talked about it. We were anxious to get it on the table. We did. So let's get into our thoughts on Imperium Horizons.
Incredible organizer.
Yeah. Osprey production is always top notch in everything they do. We've talked about a lot of their cardboard pieces and everything. They're always very nice and everything, but this is a card-driven game, and what they do is give you a super nice organizer, and they tell you in the organizer where everything should go. There's a slot for this deck, a slot for this deck. Thank you very much. I can't stand organizers that are just there, and you don't know what slot is for what.
Yeah, and I mean, there's some images over at BGG where it's like, here are all the games stored in the Horizon box. So that's nice. So you've got all the factions. So little things like that can really mean a lot for a game and for the other, you know, the games that came before. It's like, oh, do I have to, you know, people might be like, this is irritating. Now I go pull this box out to put this faction and play this faction. Okay. So there, big positive for me. I'd forgotten about how to play this game. You know, Marty, when we played the original, I enjoyed the first time we played the Imperium game and the, some of the individual parts of it where it felt like an individual game. It was me playing the game, trying to get a lot of victory points. There wasn't a lot of interaction, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, so there are cards that were put in there to drive interaction. They had like a sword icon to say, hey, this is going to affect other people. It may make people lose things. And that's what typically it was, is your opponents must get rid of something or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then there are some of the cards in there that had that too, because each civilization is going to be totally different. This game has 14 brand new civilizations. Some actually existed, the Japanese, Mayans, Polynesians, but then there's also some fictional ones like Martians. As far as we know, they're fictional. There's a cultist, etc. So this is kind of a mix and match of actual civilizations and then fictional ones also.
So it took a little bit for me to get into the flow of this game as we were going, trying to understand, you know, how to develop the deck, understand what the power of each of these cards were. Because to be honest with you, this is one of these games, I think, the more you play a certain faction, the better you'll understand the mechanics and the flow, because they're all asymmetric. There may be some intermixing when I say that if these core concepts are coming through, but overall understanding, like I believe I was playing the Japan culture in this time, and there was something to do with the lands to be able to go through those various cards and garrison some and then get rid of them to generate more resources. And I wasn't grasping, as you can tell from me speaking here, exactly what it was I needed to do to achieve the efficiency in that deck. Mm-hmm. And I think that's always a challenge with the Imperium. You need to kind of like, okay, pick one particular culture, learn it well enough before you move on.
And it's one of those things too, that everybody's going to be playing a different culture. And this gives you a chance to see how other cultures play. Because the first couple times you're going to play this game, if you keep picking different cultures, which you're going to want to do to see how they play mm-hmm. differently, it's going to be a different game every time. And you won't realize, oh, my buddy over here is playing this one. Oh, I didn't realize that faction could do that. We'll talk about this in every asymmetric game. Not only do you need to understand how your own faction works, you need to understand how the other faction works in order to play the game well. And this is no different. So, putting that aside, let's just talk about the mechanics of the game and how it works. Like you said, it's a typical deck builder. You're going to start up the civilization deck, and it's a certain set number of cards. You're going to draw those cards and play as many of those cards as you can. Those cards will be taken action. You might be able to use a card to put down and play in front of you that stays in play. And some of those will say like, hey, when you do this, you can garrison a card. Sometimes a garrison is a trigger for possibly doing something else. Or there may be a card. One of mine was, hey, you can garrison unrest cards. The unrest cards will clog up your deck because you can't do anything with them. But I had a card where I was able to basically garrison unrest cards under it. And then from there, I could take an action in order to get those unrest cards and get them back out of my deck. Otherwise, you have to take a special action to get rid of unrest cards out of your deck and spend your whole turn doing that. But again, other people may have had cards that says, hey, when you garrison here, you get something else. So they're cards you can put in play. They're cards you can acquire in the middle of the table. You can go out there and try to purchase those. There's different types of cards out there. Some are like victory point condition cards. Some are region cards. Those cards will go into play that would generate different types of resources. Depending on the faction, some of those resources combine together. You can spend those in order to do something else, etc. There may be a cards out there that are attack cards where you can attack somebody. And every attack card that I saw, use it once and then it goes to your history mm-hmm. pile. When it goes to your history, it's out of the game. But sometimes there are cards in your history pile that says, hey, if this is in your history pile, you're going to earn victory points from it at the end. So you can see there's all these different types of cards that, depending how they're used, where they're played, where they're discarded, will have some sort of benefit to them. And that's just the part of playing this game enough with the faction to understand mm-hmm. how to best, I guess, build the engine out of the faction that you're playing.
And one of the things that I forgot about the Imperium series is the fact that when you take actions, you're activating and you have a set number of actions you can take, which we track with tokens. And in this game, we were playing with three. I know there was the ability on one of my cards. I got a fourth one if I needed to. There's things called free play. And I think that's one of the key differences for me in this type of deck builder is, on my turn, I am doing these three activate or action. I'm sorry, I'm my activate turn using actions. Too many A's here. And I'm doing that. And it could be playing a card. It can be using text on the card. It can be doing various things about the abilities. And then you have to exhaust the ability by putting a token to make sure that you don't activate it again. Okay, let's say you don't really want to play a card or activate or do the activate turn. You can, like you said, innovate. Oh, innovate is where you get to go buy that card, just like we're used with normal deck building cards.
That's the one where you discard your entire hand and you call it, is it breakthrough? You can go grab a card on the table, but you don't have to take the unrest with it.
Yes, that's right. And breakthrough is a big thing because unrest clogs your hand. And then, of course, the revolt turn is where you take all the unrest that's in your hand and you discard them. Because one of the things that kind of interesting in game scenario, if you run out of unrest cards, if the table runs out of unrest cards, the game ends.
Right.
Yeah. And that's something you got to keep. But I never saw that threat in the games we played. Never saw that coming up.
No, again, people didn't want those in their hand. Also, mm-hmm. they're negative points at the end, mm-hmm. so you definitely didn't want them in your deck. Now, one thing I do think is very clever about this game is once you go through your entire deck and you have to draw again, at the beginning of the game, you've set out some additional stacks of cards from your civilization that you will acquire throughout the game. So like the first time through your deck, you're going to draw a card from one of these stacks that you've put off to the side, which is a little bit better card to add to your deck that gives you some more abilities that's made specifically for your faction. Once you've gone through that deck, you move from a barbarian to a civilized phase where you can go out and get some really cool cards. And this will come towards the end of the game where this happens, because it's those cards that's going to be able to be your victory point or fame generator for generating the most fame, and that's how you win the game. So I love this idea, is that you're starting out as a very simple civilization, but as every time you go through the deck and have to reshuffle, you're going to continue adding cards of your faction. You keep getting stronger. You learn new tech. You get new tools until you're a big civilized civilization. Wow, that's really good, Marty. Man. But that's basically where you want to try to get to. So at the end, it's like, okay, I've got all this cool stuff. Now I can spend all these resources that I've earned to buy this particular card, where if I get this card in this particular position here, it's going to generate tons of victory points for me at the end of the game once mm-hmm. it's triggered.
People need to concentrate on that and read on the rule book, which has been redone, by the way, for Horizons. So that's a good thing yes. for everybody who's... but you need to pay attention to how that works, knowing that you need to have an exhaust token. You need to say... And by the way, this can happen anytime when you have to reshuffle your deck, as I look at the rules, that mm-hmm. you can do something like this, as long as you have an exhaust token that you're able to use.
Yes. Yeah. Now you do. Yeah. You talked about action tokens to spend. You also have limited number of exhaust tokens, because mm-hmm. some of the cards you have in play will say exhaust this card. Right. It may not take an action token to use it, but it will take an exhaust token. So there are a couple different things that you could do during your turn using different types of tokens. Now, my faction actually had one that says I had to spend an action and an exhaust token on this one particular card to be able to do something. So again, it just really depends on the faction. But the core mechanics is start off a very simple deck. You're going to add cards from the center of the table. That's a market for everybody to choose from. Try to mitigate your unrest as they come into play. Get your cards into play so that you can take the actions you need on your turn and exhaust the cards you want. And then as the game progresses, you get your more powerful civilization decks. And then that progress is right to the end, to where that last deck of cards is called the development cards. If you've gotten all those, that's going to trigger the end. If there's no more cards in the main deck, that will trigger the end. There's also this King of King cards that's in the center of the table that you can access that... If you could buy those, it generates additional fame points. If the last one of those is triggered, which is the King of King cards, that triggers. So there's multiple things that can happen to trigger the end of the game. One thing that's also new in this game, too, is a solstice token that is sitting between the last player and the first player. And every time you get to the last player finishing up their turn, you get to the solstice phase. There are now cards that you have that says, okay, during the solstice phase, you can do this. So it's another time during the game when you could do some other stuff.
So for me, the challenge of this game is getting through those decks that you have to be able to add, you know, from your Ascension to a Nation cards, to be able to get those cards into it. So you've got to manage the size of your draw deck. that you've built up. Adding too much unrest, you'll never get through there to get your reshuffle to be able to add that. Because if you can't get through your ascension deck, you can't get to your development deck. This is where strategy and garrisoning of cards comes in, and understanding how they pull cards in and out of the decks as you need them, knowing how to play those to be able to get through that development deck, because you want to get to those more powerful cards. One of the things I did not do well in the game is going through that, through the thing, and doing the innovate turn, where I didn't use it, but I should have. I should have been looking at the market to help drive certain resources and be able to drive those reactions. Because I think it really does come down to, for me in this game, is how do I quickly move through the reshuffle phase to build my empire? How do I make that happen quickly? Because if you don't, the game will definitely slog for people as you're sitting there thinking, because you have limited actions you can take. So something you got to figure out from your cards. Go through those cards when you get there. Go through your thing and say, okay, what's the core mechanic? How are they doing it? Or better yet, something we should have done is check the rule book where it talks about the strategy for your empire. That's a big thing.
Talked about a very important concept of keeping your deck small so you can add in that cool stuff. So the actions you may take on your turn is actually spending an action token to put it into play. And if you could put certain cards into play on the table, what does that mean? Cool, it's out of your deck. That's less cards you're going to have to draw, and you'll get through your deck quicker. Mitigating the size of your deck and keeping it really small and tight is important, but it's also a great thing in deck building that we've always loved. Get rid of the dead weight out of your deck. Keep all the really good stuff so that you're drawing it over and over again, especially if you know your civilization good enough to see the end goal. Those development cards you're going to be buying later on, look at those and go, okay, this development card, this needs this type of resource, this types of resource, etc. Oh, cool, I got an engine for generating those resources. So when I finally get to the point I can buy them, that you got the resources you need to buy those important cards that give you the main victory points.
Once again, straight deck building type game. Go through the cards, generate, find the resources, get that combo. Get those combos running. Figure out what it is. If there is a certain type of region you need, like I needed a special type of resource that wasn't part of my deck, I had to go find that out there. I should have been using the ability to immediately get a card out of the market and put it into the hand. Big plus for this game is, for me, the asymmetry of all the various civilizations that are part of it.
And it being a deck building game and it being a Civ style game is a big thing for me. Now, there's also an expansion here. It's called the Trade Routes expansion, which is going to add some new type of resource called a good that you'll use. So there are some factions that are only meant for the Trade Routes expansion. There are some cards in the market that are only meant for that expansion. So it just gives you another type of mechanism to play the game. But note that Trade Route expansions tends to be longer and a more complicated games. And I will say, Tony, as far as deck building games, for me, this is probably the one of the more difficult deck building games to learn, because there's a lot going on and the asymmetry just adds even more to that. So it's not only understanding how the cards work and there's these different actions and these different keywords to keep track of, you've got these multiple decks right in front of you that you're going to be drawing from. You've got the market in the middle of the table with different types of decks there. And again, like I said, just every faction being totally different. So of all the deck building games I've played, this is by far the most complicated to me, and also the longest deck building game I've probably ever played.
And it's not complicated in mechanics. It's just complicated in, for me, understanding how everything fits together. Take some actions, get some cards. But once again, if you enjoy trying to solve that puzzle, then this is definitely one of those deck builders for you, and your group enjoys that singular, because you're not going to get the interaction that, you know, stealing cards from one another. You're not going to get that here, unless there may be some factions in previous that I don't remember. I'll be honest with you, I don't remember them. But with this, you know, with what we were playing, I didn't get that feeling, especially going through the market deck. And we were flying pretty well through that market deck. You know, I didn't see that strong interaction, which is fine. I don't mind that. I like playing my own little game at times. Leave me alone.
But yeah, that's the thing is, too, is if you're playing your own little game, especially when there's so much asymmetry, you can't see what really other people are doing. There was a deck that Bert played. It was supposed to have a lot of interaction, and he didn't really do a lot of interaction. I bought a couple cards from the middle of the table that allowed me to affect. One was a pirate where I got to steal some other stuff, but it was a kind of used one and gone at that point. I will say that with four players, we all felt it stayed on the table a little too long for us. And yeah. even in 2021, we played this game, we thought this game runs a little long. Now, what's nice is in the new rules, they have a short variant where what they do is they reduce the number of cards in the market deck, and you already start with a couple of your Civ cards, extra Civ cards in your hand, which means that's less you've got to try to get to. And the rules state that's going to cut down play time by about 15 minutes per player. For us, in four player, we will never play the full version again. We will only play the short version because by the end, we were kind of like, we're kind of ready for it to wrap up. But with the short version, I think it would be perfect. Say, especially saving 15 minutes per player. Guess what? You add all that up. That's an hour.
That's an hour. Yeah. For deck builders, you want to get through it pretty quick. At least I do. But then again, I think every game I want to play nowadays, I want to get through quick. But hey, that's just my attention span. If after all of this, you're saying, you know what? We enjoyed Imperium. We enjoyed the classic version. I actually did. I enjoyed the first time we played this. Definitely give Horizons a try. Redone the rule book. They can fit all your expansions into one box. New empires to challenge yourself on. So definitely give this a look.
Yeah, I definitely agree. You get the new expansion type in thing. There is a solo bot in there. David Turtsey came up with this. So if you want to play solo mode of this game, it's there with, again, with the optional rules for the shorter version. If you felt the first one ran a little bit long, you do have this in here. But do understand, if you've never played Imperium before and you like deck building games, it is going to be a little bit on the higher end of complexity that you're just going to have to get through. Once you get the flow of the game, it is straightforward, but just be patient with it and it'll come and become more second nature as you continue to play through the game and learn all the keywords and everything. So that is Imperium Horizons from Osprey Games, out now.
Unlike Robinson himself, the game is off the boat. Well, actually, Robinson kind of was off the boat. He kind of got crashed and marooned. But Robinson is making it to people's homes. I'm just saying.
Crusoe, that is, right?
Robinson Crusoe. Shop Portal Games, they are getting out the Robinson Crusoe Special Edition to everybody. Matter of fact, if you head over to Shop Portal Games, Ignacy has the promo sets out there that you can pick up and add to if you miss them for your base game. Like, I think I've gotten most of them. One of the promos that I really want to do is the deluxe components with the fire, the wood, the bananas, even some discovery tokens set, all these things that he has taken Robinson to an 11 so that you can enjoy that game as you get decimated and beat down time and time again by this game. Eventually you might win, but if not, go head over to our Discord channel where Ben will be more than happy to give you any hints that you won't. Then other new topics out there. We talked about Printing Press. Imperial Miners is still out there. You can do the pre-order on the Robinson Crusoe Book of Adventures. That's out there. And of course, the Collector's Edition. Also, be sure to check out the sales that Ignacy will occasionally post out there on some of the mats. I still need to go out there, pick up a Stronghold Undead mat. I think that would definitely be something worth investing in so that when we finally open up Stronghold Undead, that we'll have something nice to play it on. Head over to shopportalgames.com for all the incredible games that they have out there, as well as some of their free content, including promos that feed over to Imperial Miners.
Five-minute initiative begins in 3, 2, 1.
So at game night, we got to play
Alpujarras,
a Steve Finn game. did that sound like me? If y'all are confused, there's a story that will bleed into our 5 minutes here. So we're playing this game, and a gentleman walks in. He was at Tantrum Con, and he goes, "Oh, that game,
Alpujarras,"
and he's pronouncing it. And we're like, "We need to record you for the for the podcast." He's like, "So what do y'all think of this?" And so we're talking to him. So it's Marty, it is always fun when we're playing at Qdoba's and someone walks in. It happens every week. "What are y'all playing?" We had it this past week. But it's fun when someone who plays these games, we get to talk to them about this. Mm-hmm. So that was a fun part. But this is a Steve Finn game. And, you know, Steve Finn, many of us know him from his big hit, Biblios. And for this game, it is one of those games. I mean, basically, you are taking a turn by moving a mule along a track and performing the actions where your mule lands. And the ultimate goal here is to gather up some fruit, be able to sell it, gain victory points. Guess what? Most person with the most victory points wins. And so, I mean, on your turn, move your mule, land in a spot. This is one of the mechanics that we love, is the fact that we like it when you get to take your turn if you're still the mule in the back.
The Takedo type movement. The person who's in last gets to move. Yeah.
So some of the things you get to do is you'll be placing farmers, you'll move farmers, you'll be irrigating the fields. I mean, these are some of the actions that you will be taking.
I guess that's each of the actions on the board as you're moving. So you're trying to decide which one of those you want to do as you move. And obviously, you could jump as far ahead as you want.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to, it's kind of silly, but you could. But it's just got to decide what's best for you at that point. Should you move the farmers? Do you need to irrigate by, you know, putting little cardboard tokens on the board in order to open up other potential places to get fruit, et cetera. Because you just got to get some fruit, y'all. Get some fruit and sell. It's kind of the main goal here.
That's right. And there's these special spots called market spaces and harvest spaces. Now you do not have to stop there, which is different than Takedo, right? Did I say that right?
Takedo.
In Takedo, you have to stop at some point. Here, you can just blow right past it, but you're not going to. Because in a market space, you're going to have a farmer in a farmland, and you can deliver fruit to that farmland and gain points for that.
Based on what the value it is in the market. So it's a changing market. Whenever you sell fruit in a market, that market token goes to the bottom, least value, and everything else shifts up. So you kind of want to time it when you have particular fruit. You want to time it to when it's the most expensive to go to the market and sell it.
And then in the harvest phase, you are collecting fruit wherever you have the most farmers in these farmlands.
Mm-hmm.
And then you move around the board, rinse and repeat, and you keep doing these actions until you get to the final one where everybody has the ability to, you know, collect more fruit, gain more market actions, sell off more of their wares. You are limited on how much you can have of certain amounts of fruit.
Fives. Everything's in fives. Noria, fruit, etc. Yeah.
That's pretty much this game. So if you like that action of being able to, you know, move along a path, never repeating, you got to plan out when you want to sell and how each one of us can mess each other up. Because, oh, crap, Marty just sold all of his oranges and I really wanted to sell oranges in that field.
And there's like this other resource you can get, which is Noria, which is basically some free actions that you can take on your turn. So if you weren't able to land in a certain spot in order to place a farm or something like that, you can spend Noria to do that same sort of thing. And the more Noria you spend, the more benefits you earn, etc. It is somewhat a race to the end also, because the first person to get to the end is going to get a massive victory point bonus. And this is the part, Tony, where the game towards the end felt like it was running a little long. Mm-hmm. Because on the last about quarter of the board, all of us felt like we've probably maxed out all the victory points we can get. And we almost started jumping straight to the end to claim those in-game victory points really quick. So the game, once it built to a certain point, I felt like there's not much more we can do. Let's just end the game. I'm going to jump to the end and let it be over sort of deal.
Right. Yeah, because there are certain contract cards that you can fulfill, and then there are goal cards at the end, and have you met those? And those can cost you points if you don't make it to the end. If you're not the first there, first one there is going to get some special bonuses. For me, I've always enjoyed Steve Finn games. Mm-hmm. This one I think is fairly straightforward, easy to teach versus, you know, some other of these style of games that we've had, like Agizia and along those lines. So it's one that I, you know, for me, it's okay, is this one where I would like to introduce someone to this style or mechanic of a game?
Right. Now, do you remember Jokkmokk very well? The winter market, the Swedish one that had the same sort of deal moving around the board. I think I may like the card play of Jokkmokk maybe a little bit more, but I think this one might be easier to teach because those cards are variable in Jokkmokk and everything's kind of fixed in this one. If you've played Jokkmokk, it's going to kind of feel the same-ish in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. I will say when you're placing the tiles that you're moving to, they do go out. Not so much, quote, random. When I say you always have to have a market harvest, but your markets can be swapped from game to game.
Yeah, and the order of the other actions on each of those little market tiles are different between them. You're right, yes. There's some variability in the setup, yes.
So with that, if you're interested in
Alpujarras,
designed by Steve Finn, be sure to check it out.
5-minute initiative is complete.
Last year, I started playing Zelda Minish Cap. I bought
Minish Cap when it was on the Game Boy forever ago, but never finished it.
Okay, hold on. Every time you say this, I'm like, what is he pronouncing? I even see it typed out in our show notes. Minish Cap.
Mm-hmm. It's a little cap that you wear and you can make yourself tiny. You can make yourself as a mini Link.
Okay.
What is it? Minute? I don't know. This was what they call it inside the game. He wears the Minish Cap and he has the ability to shrink himself.
Okay. Okay. That works for me. I'm like, what is he saying? I'm just go with it. So this is a Link game. All right.
This is a Zelda game. Yeah.
Zelda game. All right. Keep talking.
Well, no, it is such, if you haven't played it and you have Nintendo Online, it is such a fun, classic feeling game. And actually, even though it's old graphics and everything like that, this was on the Game Boy Advance. It holds up really well. It plays well. It took me like 15 hours to play the game. It's an easy game, definitely one of the easier Zelda games. And in fact, I had so much fun with it that when I was down your way at a used video game store, They had a used copy on sale. And I actually bought it. I'm showing Tony right now. So I need to go out. I've still got a GBA SP that I could play this on. I was thinking about maybe getting a DS Lite, which still has the GBA port on it. But yeah, I actually went out and bought Zelda Minish Cap because I used to own it and I just loved it. And so I bought it again. So I had a great time. It took me forever to finish it. I kept starting, stopping. It's like, no, I'm going to sit down. I'm going to finally finish this game. And I did. It was a blast.
Okay. Well, I'm glad that you enjoyed it. Minish Cap. Small. Makes you small.
Mm-hmm.
I thought maybe it was I don't know what I was thinking. Like, I had no idea what you were talking about. And then I get this text out of nowhere from Marty. Hey, this game I like. Balatro.
I think it's Balatro. I think.
Balatro.
Balatro.
Balatro. Yeah. Hey, it's only $15. You need to go get this. Balatro. Go get Balatro. It's $15. He's been talking about this constantly. He's like, oh, this is a great game, man. It's going to take up your time and everything. I just downloaded it. I haven't played it. Okay. So I did. I spent money. You sent me, talk about passive aggressive. Oh, my heavens.
Okay. All right. But this is good. So we're not going to talk anything about it. But maybe next episode, maybe you'll have a chance to play it and you can tell me what you think of it.
No, I was watching some of the, I was looking at the screens as I was going through it. I'm like, okay, I'll definitely give this a try because I like games like this. Like you said, I would. So I'll see how much I love this game and see how much it goes. I'm getting ready to move the Nintendo Switch to a better monitor so that I can play these games. Because, these small screens, my car has a bigger screen than my Nintendo Switch.
I will say, if you do play handheld, even on the main screen, it has these scan lines to make it look like an old CRT. If that annoys you, you can go on the settings and turn that off.
Okay, I'll give it a try. After we get off of recording, I'm going to probably crank that bad boy up and give it a shot so that we can sit there and talk about it in the next episode.
Yeah, so next episode we'll talk about Balatro, so I can't wait.
Well, with that said, and the fact that, the Squirrelies were short and we just talked a lot about the start of baseball, or not baseball. Oh, baseball's starting back up.
Yes, it is. It's spring training right now, and I can't wait to go check out some minor league games this year, too.
Yeah, I asked my daughter if she got me some Savannah Banana tickets, and she said they were sold out before they could even get there. I was like, you guys are kidding me.
It's crazy how fast those sell out, because they travel all over the nation now.
Mm-hmm, they do. And did you see who pitched for him the other day?
Some former major leaguer, right?
Roger Clemens.
Gosh. Can you believe that to the point now they can pull out retired major leaguers to come and make special appearances now?
Yeah, if Nolan Ryan shows up or Randy Johnson or Roger Clemens, I'm just like, oh, just go ahead. I mean, it's bad enough they got people pitching on stilts and stuff. Oh,
I saw Nolan Ryan pitching last year. The dude can still throw.
He's incredible.
It's insane.
It's unreal. I wish my arm would stay intact like that. So,
I agree.
Speaking of keeping intact, just keep rolling dice.
And taking names.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Make sure to follow us on the socials over at Dice and Names on Twitter and Instagram. Join our Discord, which you can find the link over at RollDiceTakeNames.com. You can also support the show over at BuyMeAMoonPie.com.
All right, Tony, I've actually finished the Coke Spice. I'm kind of done with it. I don't think I ever need another one of these.
I'm still burping the aftertaste, buddy.